episode 40 is momentous. I'm very excited.
That was the goal. That was the goal this whole year.
Yes, we wanted to make it to at least 40 episodes in 2022, and we've done it in the essentially first week of December. Yeah. Good for us. I'm proud of us. We did good. Of all the horrible things, of course, in case you don't know what you're listening to.
Yeah, you clicked on it. You should know. You clicked on us.
With your very rigorous and devoted hosts, Enan and Chris. Coming at you with a Wednesday episode, and we are recording on Wednesday. Did you realize this till just now? I just realized this myself.
That was serendipitous.
Clearly was. Yes, we have a Tim Burton show, the first show ever kind of built by Mr. Burton. Granted, he did not direct them all, but it seemed
not
like
all of
he
them.
Was behind the story of most of what was happening, and certainly the tone and
yeah,
how it
influential,
looks.
Certainly. Yeah. If this was his first endeavor into television, I think he nailed it.
It's only downhill from here.
Well, here's the thing, and I didn't know this until you told me, is that this was like record-breaking for Netflix, right?
Yes, it's officially, as of yesterday, the third most watched show ever on Netflix, and I know like two or three weeks ago, or within the first 10 days or something, it had matched Stranger Things for this year, so... Right. It's definitely crushing it, and wow. Without question, there's going to be more, right? There can't not be more.
Oh, absolutely. Here's the crazy thing, though. This was originally supposed to be released in October for Halloween. Now, I think something to consider here is that it may not have been as successful if it was released in October.
Do you think it was oversaturation stuff? Or?
No, I think it's oversaturation and it would have gotten lost.
Yeah, that could be. And frankly, I like it now. I think it's really appropriate post-Thanksgiving vibe to keep me in the ghoulish spirit, I guess, as we move past that season. It kept me rooted. And a la like an Edward Scissorhands or a Sleepy Hollow, it has this more of amorphous late fall, beginning of winter vibe to it.
Yeah.
Which I think is just Tim Burton's season that he always nails so well. Out of all of his movies, which did you feel like this was the most akin to?
Possibly Sleepy Hollow.
I'm thinking Sleepy Hollow too. Yeah.
I don't know where they filmed Sleepy Hollow, but I believe this was filmed in like Bucharest.
Romania,
yeah,
which is a very corrupt country. Sorry, Romanian fans. I know you're a plenty.
Great
but
for
I'm
filming.
Surprised they went there, honestly, between the cost of just, you know, flying whole cast and crew out there, or unless they really took advantage of cheap labor over there or something. We should look into the production of it a little bit more potentially, but why Romania?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think it really comes down to it's much easier to film tax incentives in another country. Did you know Barbarian was also completely filmed overseas?
In Romania or just overseas?
If not Romania, maybe Croatia.
So, okay, interesting. So, yeah. That zone. Very interesting. Scandinavian zone, which is very, you know, desolate and bleak and feels like it's probably late fall, early winter, 24/7,
you know? Yeah, and you're able to build your own sets there. I imagine it's a lot cheaper to build a whole town there.
Right.
I was in love with the setting of this show.
Yeah, I was too. It was very cool to have the dichotomy of Nevermore and then the town. Do you remember what the town's name was? That's escaping me right now.
Jericho,
which is interesting too, because it has that the biblical references. Biblical. And certainly Pilgrim World is a big part of Jericho, which I loved. We have a big bad that I can't wait to talk about too, like an ultimate big bad. There's multiple big bads, but
sure.
There's Big Bad Junior and Big Bad Junior Junior, essentially. I got to deal with here. I thought it was just like beautiful throughout. I have mostly good things to say about the show. Certainly there were some issues I had. I don't know if you had any at all, but it had more to do with moving the plot forward, and it had to move forward, and it never felt repetitious to me, but there were some just like easy things for Wednesday to happen upon that bothered me that didn't feel as written with finesse as other aspects of the story. You know, I mean, that's going to happen when you're, you know, creating kind of like this whodunit long run murder, she wrote. yeah. Murder She Woe, if you will, since all the titles of these episodes have woe in it. Which brings us to, did you ever know why Morticia named Wednesday Wednesday?
No, I had no clue. And I found
this very interesting.
Please.
Have you heard of the poem that she refers to, which I did when I looked it up, but I hadn't prior to that. But ultimately, there's this nursery rhyme called Monday's Child, where it goes through all the days of the week, and it kind of like tells you your archetype based on what day you were born. And just quick little run through here for people, if you'll indulge me on this poem. So Monday's Child is fair of face. Tuesday's child is full of grace. Wednesday's child is full of woe.
Brilliant.
Which points to all the names of the episodes. Then you got Thursday's child has far to go. Friday's child is loving and giving. Saturday's child works hard for a living. And the child born on the Sabbath day is bonny and blithe, good and gay.
Love it. Love it.
Anyways, Wednesday is the only one with a little bit of darkness in it, which is really appropriate for her name.
That's brilliant. And I wonder if the original show, if it's the same meaning, you know, or did they really build out the universe and backstory just for this series?
I do wonder that as well. I think maybe when they decided to just focus just on Wednesday, am I crazy in thinking this was initially supposed to be called Nevermore? Maybe that's a myth. Maybe that's just, I just made that in my head. But for some reason, I remember hearing in the initial percolations of the production of this, it being called Nevermore, and then it switched to Wednesday, which is one of the biggest complaints I've seen online, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but how do you feel about not getting a lot of the rest of the Addams Family, given that's her namesake, this is where we've known her from? Granted, it's obvious it's focused on her based on the title, but did you think we needed more of Morticia and Gomez and Pugsley and Lurch and all them than we got?
No, in fact, I think it worked better because of it. I think you almost needed to. Here's my quick, my justification, if you will. Look at the comic book movies. When you have these big comic movies where everyone comes together, you've got too many characters and you can't focus on them enough. The standalone movies, the origin stories, you get so much more there.
That's true.
And if anything, in this show, the best side character was Thing. Which never really had an opportunity to have personality put into this hand.
He did have in the movies. There was a little bit of personality. He was pretty, not like this though. He is fleshed out. Well, pun intended. To the umph degree. I don't want to jump to things, but when we see him in peril, you care as much as you would about any character.
Yeah.
And he's just a hand. Do you remember Thing in the old movies as stitched up as this one? How he was kind of like, it was just a regular hand, right?
No, it was just a regular hand. But
maybe sewed at the top, but there was stitches all over this one.
They added so much curiosity and backstory just by having them on there, though. And, you know, there were some jokes thrown around that, you know, I think Gomez even pointed to the, like, when she calls them out on having Thing there to spy on her, I think they say, did you do anything to him, or along those lines?
Right.
And I think it just adds into this, you know, almost like a teddy bear that's been put back together so many times because you've played too hard
with
it.
That's a good way to put it.
You know, it's
he's like the ultimate
family
pet, really.
Yeah,
they have
yeah.
the best pet you could possibly have for such a dark theme. And granted, it's at Nevermore, which I love the name of, certainly namesake of Edgar Allan Poe's poem, which for those of you who are familiar with it are really about like the inability to hold on to what we have and like cherishing memory, because that's all you're gonna really have. I mean, every moment we live is already in the past. So I just find it interesting that it's, you know, she's going there and she doesn't want to hold on to her parents' past. Let's talk about that, because in the first episode, I didn't anticipate the sort of dynamic she would have with her parents, because I don't feel like we've seen her kind of being critical of them in the movies as much, at least. Maybe she makes a couple snarky remarks, but in this one, it seems like she's really rallying against becoming who her mom specifically has become, or falling in love and being reliant, dependent on another person like her dad and her mom are.
That, and the fact that any way you look at it, she's still a teenage girl. And this is her rebellious stage. She is clearly very independent. She's more of an adult than some of the adults on this show. I mean, she's more mature than the sheriff.
Oh, yes. So looking forward to talking about the sheriff, too.
Yeah.
Which we don't meet the sheriff in the... Oh, we do meet the sheriff in the first episode.
Oh, yes, because of the hiker. The hiker who goes out.
Let's talk about that really quick, because that was like the first jaunt away from our main character. And we got this guy that seems like we're going to... Actually, he's going to be a big part of the show almost at first.
Right. It felt that way.
And then he gets eaten... I'm sure you assumed it was a werewolf like I assumed it was a werewolf.
I did, yeah.
Speaking of which, check out my shirt. For Thanksgiving, I went to New Orleans, and I learned about this new mythological creature, which is a werewolf of the swamps
that
goes specifically after children that misbehave, speaking of Wednesday, right? And they call it the Rougarou!
I love that. It's very appropriate.
I've never heard of it before, but just like the idea of a werewolf in the swamps is just such an interesting concept to me. Oh,
that's
and the
great.
Only way to ward it off, for those of you who do live in the South and are listening, is to surround your bed, children that is, that misbehave, if you want to continue misbehaving and survive the Rougarou, surround your bed with rice, so make a rice barrier, or, put a stack of coins next to your bed with 12 or more, because supposedly the Rougarou will not be able to resist counting the coins, and it can only count to around 12, and then it has to start over again based on its memory elapses. So
that's amazing.
I'm saving little misbehaving kids out there like Wednesday.
I think everyone can appreciate that, especially around the holidays here.
But yes, it wasn't a werewolf, to get back to our point here. And this guy is slaughtered and completely ripped apart, and pieces of him are missing, interestingly enough.
Correct. And I thought, it seemed a little bit, a little cliche, you know, to start off. But once you're finished with the series as a whole, you look back at that as being a very important moment. And
it is. And it's the only time we meet the sheriff, I feel like, in that first episode. Am I wrong? Because he's played such a huge part after that.
I think so. I mean, there been one more check-in with him, but it doesn't matter.
I can't remember if she goes into town in that first episode at all.
Possibly. Does she see the therapist in the first episode?
No, she doesn't see the therapist
second
in the
episode
first one.
Then.
I think it's more about learning about Nevermore and the dynamic between, because it takes a minute for her to get there, get settled, meet Enid, her roommate, who I'm looking forward to talking about. Total contrast of Wednesday. I thought she would annoy the hell out of me, but I ended up finding her a very intriguing character in the end. One that I was rooting for, especially come the end. They didn't need to go to the town in this first one because Nevermore is so rich. Do you want to talk about like what your first impressions of this place was? Because to me, it was like Buffy meets Harry Potter.
I was just going to say Harry Potter. And I mean, I've only seen a little bit of the Harry Potter films, but even I knew that it felt very, which I think was perfectly fine. I think they even establish the different groups, almost like houses. Different houses in Harry Potter. Yeah.
There's cliques, and I made note of these. So you got the Fangs, which of course are the werewolves. I'm sorry. The Fangs are the vampires.
That's right.
The Furs are the werewolf. The Stoners is a clique I never anticipated being in the show, which I find very fun, and I want them to use it much more than they did in this one. That's the Stoners, who happen to also, it seems like, get stoned themselves, but are Medusas, like male Medusas and female Medusas.
Did I make this
Ajax
up? Or did they...
Are you talking? Ajax is our main Medusa that we follow.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they also, though, introduce the term Gorgon? Did I make that up?
No, they did mention that, and I think that is also a Stoner. You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
Stoners
and
Gorgons are synonymous. And then the Scales, which I found also really interesting. These are sirens. So my question is, because we do see a mermaid in a latter episode, and that's what sirens are most affiliated with. They're also called the Scales. So can these ones that walk on land also then become a mermaid in the water? This sort of thing is not established, and I would love for them to flesh out.
Oh, no, it is.
It is.
Well, in the canoe race, the one, the boy, the boy siren, he turns into...
He does. So he goes from legs to fins. Okay. Correct. I guess I missed that scene. I remember seeing the mermaid. I was just wondering, is this guy relegated to running from water or something? The merman. Yes. But they go beyond that. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm getting too excited about the show.
Well, no, I just thought it was interesting that two of your major cliques right there are straight out of Greek mythology, which I thought was interesting.
That's true.
Your Medusas and your sirens. The siren, obviously, being part of the Odyssey,
right?
Which was interesting. I think it adds that level
of a lot of literary stuff going on in here, which I love. Oh yeah, you know, there's so many references to so many novels,
Edgar Allan Poe,
even other shows and movies. That is just really cool. But they do go beyond these four cliques, and that's one of them, of course, is what our beloved Wednesday has the capability of doing. She doesn't fall with one of these cliques, right? She's a clairvoyant of sorts. Can she see in the future? She can just see memories from the past. She has these flashes from the past.
It's both.
She can go into the future too. Okay.
Right. So because remember, one of the first people she meets in town, or when she's escaping, she bumps into that truck driver who she sees his accident happen before it happens.
Okay. All right. So yeah, what would you call this? These are like our psychic.
Yeah. Group, right. But here's, I mean, I think this may have been, I mean, maybe it could have been a little bit more explained. I mean, everyone in that school is referred to as an outcast, right?
Yes, the outcasts. And the normies.
The normies, right. The townies are normies. So they needed to find a way of making, out of a school of outcasts, how do you make Wednesday the outcast within the outcasts? So
that's a good point.
Only clairvoyant, although her mom, when she attended Nevermore, was a clairvoyant, I would
presume.
But
she was a different type. This is what I love, how they differentiated the types of clairvoyants.
But what was Gomez then?
That's a good question.
Just weird.
I want to say he's going to have a different, because obviously we meet Fester later and he's got this electricity. So I'm assuming it's some sort of power along. Maybe he also has electricity and we don't know.
Was Fester's electricity associated? Did he gain that electricity from all the lobotomies and like?
Doesn't he get struck by lightning multiple times in the movie version?
Yes, he does.
Okay, you're right. What does Gomez do? What does Pugsley do? This is yet to be known as well. But what's interesting is the people that surround her, with few exceptions, like Enid and Bianca the Siren, are also outcasts among the outcasts, because you have Xavier, who has one of the coolest powers ever, if you ask me. He can draw something and manifest it, which I think is really cool. And I didn't see that coming, and I haven't really seen that in many things, if anything.
No, before. Very original.
Very
Love
cool
that.
Power. Especially because his drawings were really fun to look at too.
Yeah.
It brought me back to that Cabinet of Curiosities episode we saw, which were manifesting things from painting. So I thought that was cool. And then of course, fan favorite, I'm assuming, is going to be little Eugene, who we don't find out till very, very late. Not only is the beekeeper, but controls the bees.
I know.
Watch out, Nicolas Cage.
So something else, though, I guess, you know, when you look at these other outcasts who have different powers, you also have the principal headmaster, Gwendolyn Christie, who's a shapeshifter. So I guess the thing I really liked about that is that we're not limited to just these cliques.
Yeah.
Season 2 could bring in brand new creatures, monsters, whatever you want. So I would say the amount of monsters is limited, especially when you see the diary later by
That's right.
Yeah, so this world is just full of monsters, and
which now I want to make another comparison. It's X-Men like too. This is a dark X-Men in
that's
a way,
true,
because
that
it's
is
the
true.
Same age as most of the kids at Xavier School for Gifted Children, and these are outcast children. So there's that as well. If you're an X-Men fan, you're gonna love Wednesday too.
X-Men meets Harry Potter. Yeah,
there's a Buffy in there too. There's definitely some Buffy in there as well. But yeah, what else are we going to talk about this first episode? Because I thought it was a good way to segue us into this, to get us on board. She lives in Ophelia Hall, which is one of the literary references we mentioned to
before. Yeah, Shakespeare.
From Shakespeare, the poor woman that kills herself in Shakespeare, hating her family, similar to how we find Wednesday hating her family.
Yeah.
What else? Was there any other like really amazing moments for you in this first one?
By the end of the first episode, now I'm combining them in my head. Do we see the cello being introduced by the end of the first episode, or is that also the second episode?
Okay. To be honest,
because I thought that was fantastic. I also just love the room that Wednesday has. I love they draw the line down the middle. She chips away the color in the stained glass. The glass that really sets up just the look for this entire.
It might have been in the first episode. Now you got me confused.
Yeah.
But that was when I really felt Danny Elfman's influence more than any other musical moment was that cello solo, because it was beautiful. I did find it a little weird at first how Reams was like musing, oh, this is so good.
Yeah.
Of course, we find out later she's going to then put her in the ceremony for the unveiling of the Joseph Crackstone statue, who was the founder.
Yeah.
The town, right, of Jericho.
Yes, very Jebediah Springfield, if you will.
indeed, and I can't wait to talk about his look when we finally get to see him back alive, because it reminded me of another movie, the way he looks a lot. I love the rivalry right off the bat between Bianca and Wednesday, because I found Bianca really intimidating with those wide eyes. That was scary.
Oh yeah,
I found her definitely formidable, someone to go against Wednesday. That was appropriate. Xavier knowing her from the past, I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Grandmothers were friends.
Yeah.
I'm assuming this is Grandmama, which would be Morticia's mother, correct?
Yes. Yeah,
I would have. Because that's one, such a big character in the show and the movies, we don't get her in this first season, so I would be shocked if we don't somehow get her integrated into the next one. Xavier's grandma was dead. That's where they met at her funeral.
That's right. So that's right.
Hopefully Grandmama is still alive and kicking. And also I'm hoping we get Thing in there. Or no, Cousin It. How can we not want to see some Cousin It? But how do they do it?
I don't know. Did it in the movies.
In this one we also learn, which is a big thread throughout the first three quarters of the series, that Gomez is allegedly a murderer,
and that murderer.
He had gotten out of town to avoid being charged. Ultimately, they didn't have proof at the time, but the sheriff just knows that it was Gomez
right.
who killed. It was a descendant of the founder, Joseph Crackstone. Strange name, Crackstone.
Yeah.
Found that an interesting name. What else hit the spot in that first one? Because there was a lot. Like, they hit us with so much first episode. It's hard to even, remember it all.
Yeah, there's a lot of just, the little details that I liked. Like, the opening scene with the piranha is just...
Oh, my goodness.
Really shows you what she's capable of. And... my God, the creativity there. And that she, she comes off as a character who doesn't care about anything, but which is far from the truth, because even in the beginning, she's defending her brother.
Right.
She says, only I get to torture my brother, which is really great.
True.
And then
at first, I was a little worried about those visions of hers, because I found it a little cheesy the way that she looked up. Still not entirely on board with that. I'm hoping that she can control herself when she has them in the future. It just seemed a little, that was one of the silly moments to me, was her looking up. But certainly feeding that bully's wiener to the piranha, you can't go wrong with that, because that definitely happened. He did not get
very,
up in time. That's loose
very
meat.
Clever.
That's
oh,
loose
boy.
Meat. That poor Oof. Guy.
Just
and then of course
really
we
funny.
Do learn she also cares about her pets and her pet scorpion Viper, we learn about.
That's right.
And how this puppy passed away so tragically.
Terrible. Terrible flashback. Just kids are the worst. That's what I got out of this first episode. Kids are the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And then, of course, we didn't mention that we meet Tyler, the barista, as well.
Right.
And Sparks fly? Do Sparks fly? What do you think?
No, well, it's really hard to tell with her. Maybe on his half, I could see that something from him, you know, this girl is very different. Or, spoiler alert, do we know now from the very from what happens
he
at the end?
Planner.
Right.
Right. I was a little overwhelmed at first because I thought she had three suitors to begin with between Tyler, Xavier, and Rowan even seemed, because they had that moment together in the nurse's office, who ultimately ends up being the kid that tries to kill her with the gargoyle and then ultimately gets murdered by the beast, the Hyde, from our Jekyll and Hyde character.
That's right.
And we find out about later. But thankfully they narrowed it down to two, which I found another, like, do we need the love triangle? Yeah, I guess you do. It's ultimately about teenagers.
Right. So every young adult story has the love triangle.
We have, well, what is it like?
Twilight.
Thank you. Yes.
I knew where you were going. Yes, exactly. It's Twilight. Also The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Aha. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Very similar in nature to Sabrina. That's a good point. Shares another a lot of vibes with Sabrina. Should we bust into episode two?
Yeah. I mean,
loneliest number. And this is where we find out that Reams is the shapeshifter because she is trying to protect the image of Nevermore, like, to a fault, right? This is what we learn is, like, her Achilles heel. And whether or not she can get redemption, I think, is answered later in the series. But she can shapeshift, and unfortunately, this is the one of two moments we get to see her shapeshift in the show, right?
Yes, we see it happen. Which we definitely see it happen twice.
Yes.
I would love to have seen it more.
I know. I felt like that was underused. And then this is the first episode that we finally get to meet our therapist, Kinbot. Another cool name. I'm liking a lot of these names in here. A very interesting name, Kinbot. I've never heard that before.
No.
But she ultimately is kind of scary in herself. If I was Wednesday, I would not want to share with this woman. Actress is Ricky Lindholm, who, interestingly, I'm wondering this has to do with her getting the role, was in a movie called, Wednesdays. Let me see if I can stretch it out there. Movie called Wednesday Again in 2008. So
that's amazing.
It's a date that's akin to her, to Kinbot, very akin to Kinbot. And what do you think about how everyone just accepted Thing at this point in the series, episode two only? Thing is like everybody's best friend.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about Thing is that I think, especially at a place like Nevermore, you've seen crazier things, right?
Yeah,
you've seen crazier things. True. So you're going to accept this. It's amazing how everyone can understand what he's quote unquote saying, but.
Yes. And I mean, we could go on forever asking questions about Thing. How does he see? This is my biggest, my biggest question. He's very aware and can get around so well. And he's also a meddler. He's like a meddling parent when he aids protective. In her romance life later in the series.
Yeah, protective for sure.
Yes, very protective. But then we have this cool moment where there's this canoe race, and I'm brought back to Adam's Family Values. I don't know about you, but this is what felt like, okay, we are tapping into Adam's
More
Family
of a summer
values.
Camp feel.
And there was another like reference to the Addams Family reunion. Is that another like movie, or was that the first one? Is there a reunion in the first one? I don't know. It seemed glib. It seemed like they were referencing something that happened in the previous films. But this is a cool canoe race. I mean, this could have been lame, and you know, it wasn't, because like as mentioned earlier, we have mermaids sabotaging. We have the Thing getting in on a play and like able to somehow swim through water and punch the mermaid in the face. That was cool. And this
Such
is
force.
Where Enid and Wednesday, I feel like, really get their bond on together.
Yeah. Yeah. They start like actually working together. You know, the enemy of my enemy type of a thing.
And I believed it. Like that first episode, I was like, are these just, they're going to go against each other. She's going to wolf out because Enid's a werewolf. They're going to fight, but they become so close that when they do fray a little bit later, you don't want them to, as 40-year-old dude. No, don't. Don't stop being friends. But yeah, in this one, they win, of course. And this is something that hadn't been done from the Ophelia Hall since her mother went there. So it was a big deal.
It's a big deal. I loved that there were no rules. You know, it's like, hey, beat them at their own game. And they're going to get upset, but it was fun.
Yeah, it definitely was. This is also where we start to get more of the dynamic between Tyler, the barista, and one of the love interests, and his dad, the sheriff.
Right.
Let's talk about the sheriff, because at first I struggled with this character. And as it went along, I found him more interesting, I guess. But it wasn't because of the dynamic between him and his son talking about their dead mom. I felt that they beat that dead horse. The same scene happened multiple times between those two. You want to talk about mom yet? No, I don't have time. How about now? Nope, nope, not yet. It was just too much for
that
me.
Their dynamic sucked
of all the dynamics, like, of our main players for me.
Agreed.
I struggle with that. Granted, it was necessary, I guess, to really beat it into us as we find out later that her mom was bipolar, or his mom was bipolar, and was also inflicted with the same curse, I guess, that Tyler is. But yeah, and this one we also get an archery foreshadowing moment. I don't know if you remember that, because there's a big moment with bow and arrow in the final episode.
They have Wednesday going around to the different groups to see where she could maybe fit in with an extracurricular.
Right.
And that's where she also meets Eugene and the beekeepers.
Yeah, so we don't know he can control bees yet. He's just hilarious, though.
Yeah.
He's so fun, and I just adore that he thinks he's going to get Enid, who's so out of his league, barely knows he exists, sort of thing. And another classic trope, certainly. But this kid is hard to not root for, right?
Agreed. Yeah. This kid is another outcast among outcasts.
Yes. I liked him throughout it. I was sad when he ended up in a coma. But another couple interesting aspects of what happened in this episode was we learned about the secret society. And they utilized the snap to ultimately open the secret door by a statue. What do you think about the secret society? Because I don't know why it was super necessary.
No, I don't either. I think I don't know. I think it was just another reason to show that her mom was part of something even more special there. But yeah. I agree. I think it was also fun to kind of show how clever Wednesday is to find these clues.
That's true.
Kind of.
Yes.
But yeah,
we failed to mention she herself is attempting to write novels about a detective woman called Viper. Yeah. So she's essentially trying to manifest her novel through herself from what I'm seeing. She's building a lot of what Viper is from her. So you're right. She is a sleuth. She can break it down, and she doesn't hesitate to even look into the past of her own parents and such. This is also where it's established that Bianca and Xavier used to go out together.
Briefly, very brief.
So maybe this is secret society is really like it's a tool for us to understand all of these kids' relationships a little bit more. See who's in and who's out, because Enid's not part of this, we find out, right? Certainly right. Eugene's not part of it. So it kind of gives you a sense of the hierarchy that's going on. And obviously Bianca and Xavier's relationship does play their ex relationship, former relationship, play a role in future plot points.
I guess there's also an opportunity to throw in a statue of Edgar Allan Poe with a raven.
Yes, that as well. You needed that. If I'm not mistaken, Burton directed these first two, right?
How many more did
he direct? Was it only those two?
I think so. I could be wrong, but I don't remember seeing
it. I think it was two. Yeah, I think you're right. Which, I love the first one. The second episode didn't quite live up to the first one for me. Because I felt like they were just front-loading way too much stuff.
Yeah. I guess the only thing we really haven't mentioned yet is that we have met Christina Ricci.
Yes, we have met Christina Ricci. And, which is, okay, this is what I find a little frustrating, right? And it wasn't building a world in the way that I felt like they could, and maybe focused on kids that we didn't need to focus on as much in this first season, was that she's the only teacher at Nevermore that we meet. And then the headmaster Reams. Those are the only two employees that we meet, right? That's a problem for me.
Yes.
The only class we see her in is Thornhill's plant class, botany class, and we never see her in another class, and I find that a little obnoxious, to be honest with you, especially when
I thought
they could have started fleshing that out a little bit more. Even just saying, oh, I'm coming from this class, get more of a sense of the stuff that she's learning at Nevermore.
Yeah. I thought there was one more. I don't know. Oh, the fencing teacher.
Ah, yes. Okay. Touche.
But
touche.
Oh, touche. But in your defense, because I completely agree with you, that really wasn't a class. It was just like a, almost like the extracurricular. And yeah. I agree. I think there should have been more teachers, kind of like in Harry Potter, from what I understand, that either also teach you about your own powers.
Yeah. When did you start suspecting certain people, let's say? Because this is the episode where we kind of get our, who could be our problem, right? Because we meet the therapist. We get a better sense of Thornhill in this one. Reams obviously is coming out as a shapeshifter. Did you feel like the whole plot was predictable for you?
Honestly, no.
Same.
There was some really great red herrings.
Exactly. They kept you guessing. That, even though I will say who ends up being the one in control in the episode 3, I felt like they really drilled it in when they're at the dance, who it was, because they show a picture of this person that's supposed to be dead and then immediately show who that person turns out to be, like the next frame. There were a couple moments where I felt like it was a little too obvious, but like you said, there were red herrings after I really kind of bought into this. Yeah. It turned out to be right. That threw me off as the episodes went off, and I really appreciated not fully knowing and always guessing and not being like, duh, this is so obvious.
Yeah, especially in a show where, I mean, you have, I don't know, elements of like the movie Clue, you know, all of these mysteries going on. You can't make it predictable. Otherwise, this would have been a big flop. And I think it's one of the biggest reasons this is so loved right now.
Yes, I completely agree. Talking about Christina Ricci gives me the opportunity, because this cast is moving. It's trucking, because it's just so fun to think about this show.
Yeah.
Will they bring back former Addams Family movie actors in roles in future seasons?
Yeah, I think that's part of the fun of our culture right now. If you're watching Chucky, I think shows like that that are getting relaunched or revitalized.
Who would be your dream person to come back and in what role? Because I'm thinking Angelica Houston as Grandmama would be so fun.
Yeah, I was just going to say Angelica Houston, but I did not know in what capacity, in what role. I'm also trying to think of other actors.
If Christopher Lloyd. Anything would be amazing.
Yeah. I think those are your top two, aside from, you know, Christina Ricci.
I don't know who the kid who played Pugsley is. Maybe he could sneak in there as something too. He's still in the game. Or even maybe a Joan Cusack. Toss her in there.
Ooh.
That would be great. She could be Grandmama too. She could definitely pull that off. Should we bust ahead to episode 4, Whoa, What a Night, and discuss what goes on in this one? As mentioned, this is where I really started getting a sense of who it was, but the dance itself was a ton of fun, and I hate dances in shows, right? They always suck so bad. The only good one is maybe Carrie, and thank you, Wednesday, for giving this beautiful homage to Carrie.
I think it was just that. And I think one of the most fun things about this sequence is they let Jenna Ortega do the choreography herself.
Really? For that herself. Wicked dance that she does?
Yeah, it is.
No joke.
Wicked. So much fun.
It is. I can't remember like as cool or memorable of a dance since Pulp Fiction, probably, right? A dance that really just like steals the episode or takes the momentum or the breath away of the rest of the episode, because it's so powerful. And I didn't know that she put it together herself. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think Wednesday, as a character thing, knows how to dance like this? Forgetting that Jenna Ortega did it, just like, if this is something that Wednesday is good at, why? It's like, well, theories, but...
Yeah, theories. I mean, she's also amazing at fencing. So I'm thinking her dad taught her how to fence, and I'm thinking her mom taught her how to dance.
That's a good theory. And I do feel like the Addams family just hosts so many parties, as we saw in the movies and such, that it's something that she can be good at that's not, like, normie, but at the same time, she can, like, show her character through it in a way she can't express otherwise when she's kind of been relegated to this high school. I would have loved to seen her more in the regular high school, though, right?
That was
a little frustrating that we moved so quickly into Nevermore. Give me a little bit more of her in that regular high school, because she's just such an iconoclast in it. Here's a quick question for you. Because we're at Nevermore in Jericho, and the Addams family is so synonymous with their house, I felt like we were missing the character of the house, because itself, with all of its intriguing rooms and, you know, secret doors and such, did you miss it? Do you want season two to spend more time in the house? Is it necessary? Is it already been done via the movies?
So I think we've seen it, right? I think we've seen it. It would have been too reminiscent. And I think when we're following Wednesday as a character, we want to see what's going on in her life. And I don't think if they would have focused on that, I think I would have been a little too cliche.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessary. I'm trying to think, did we see any of it? I remember feeling like I saw the exterior at some point, but I could be confused.
Yeah.
When they're driving away from it. But, oh my
possibly.
Gosh. Yeah, I love that house, but you're right. I don't know if it's necessary, but I hope we get a little bit more of it. And while we're in that realm of characterization, did you have some? Because I want to talk Pugsley here for a second.
No, let's talk Pugsley.
It was not what I expected, and it's not what we've seen before. I associate with him as this, like, wild animal, right? Pugsley is the wild one. Wednesday is the methodic one. And instead, we have kind of a victimized Pugsley here who, you know, it needs Wednesday to stick up for him in a way that the other one, I don't feel like, did. Is that direction for him? Do we need more Pugsley?
I don't know. Maybe he hasn't come into his own yet. Maybe it's because he hasn't hit puberty.
Yeah, no, that's true. And they do later in the series have a really awesome scene together, throwing grenades in the pond, fishing. which was great.
Was great.
It was actually the subsequent episode, if you want to move on to that one, unless there's anything else you want to say about the dance. Or what about the mayor's son in the dance, him pulling this prank, and whether or not he had legit feelings for Enid?
You know, I think this kid was one of the weaker parts of the show. Okay. And I'm not just saying because of his performance. I'm just saying in, like,
motives.
I don't know.
I completely agree with you. I mean, he gets his ass handed to him a couple times by Wednesday prior to this.
That was
and
fun.
And of course, she
that
blows up the statue of Crackstone.
Yeah.
So I guess I understand why he'd want to do it, but I don't know. You're right. We get him sort of seeming like he's into Enid, but does it anyways. Yeah. And then she's back into Ajax after they kind of had a miscommunication. And then later in the series, we have the mayor's son. I'm sorry, I can't recall his name. Now into Bianca as well. So I think maybe they're setting up the Bianca, Enid, mayor's son trio, or I don't know, down the line. But you're right. He was kind of weak, but he does lose his dad, as we find out later. They gave him stuff to work with. Let's put it that way. He had stuff that he could have worked with, and maybe he just wasn't utilized how he should have been. But let's jump to the flashback episode. What did you think about how different this episode was from the rest of them?
Now you're talking about the flashback to
Goody? Yeah, so this is where we go back and we see the Gomez Morticia events.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's being
like the actual
of having killed.
Well, first of all, I thought the casting was great.
Certainly for Morticia. Completely agree. The Gomez was hit or miss for me. I love Louis Guzman, but I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I don't think you can find a young Louis Guzman under any circumstances. but they did as well as they could, I reckon.
Yeah, you know, I think these moments were interesting. A show that's supposed to be focusing more on Wednesday, this subplot of the murder was just interesting.
I think it was what people needed to get a little dose of the family, because when there wasn't the flashbacks, this was an episode where we really understood the relationship between Wednesday and each of her family members, between the fishing scene with Pugsley and then the grave digging scene with her mother. And essentially extorting the mayor with her mother as well.
That's right.
One of my favorite scenes in the whole series is her with her dad at jail, where he's talking to her and she believes him. She could just tell by the cadence in his voice that he didn't do it. And it was sweet. Her and Louis. I want more of Louis Guzman. Who wouldn't?
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. But yeah, overall, you learn that Wednesday is like the heart of this family, like the real thing that pulls them all together.
I think we got to give Gomez credit for making her that, though.
Yeah.
Because especially after Gomez has been put in jail, falsely accused by this mayor, then he's released and he's shaking the guy's head. Don't worry about it. You know what I mean? He's like, he's such a good hearted ghoul, you know, that
water under the bridge.
Exactly. Okay, let's jump ahead. Now we're going to get this next episode, quid pro quo. I feel like they're doing a lot of plot stuff to get us to our final two episodes. Starts with the surprise birthday party. She sees stuff written on the cave wall. This is the kind of stuff I was talking about earlier, where it just kind of like plotty. You know what I mean? Let's get to understanding what's going on and not necessarily the most elegant manner, but
sure,
there are some fun moments in it, certainly. And that's where you get Kinbot's red herring, where I started to think, oh, maybe it's not. Maybe it's Kinbot, because her flowers are the exact same flowers we find in the Beast's home.
I mean, I certainly thought in this episode, like, oh, they even make her look like she's in that painting, like the family in.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the hair was more blonde. I definitely, in this episode, started thinking it was her. Another really fun moment is Enid giving her the snood. Have you ever heard of a snood?
You know what? It sounded so familiar. And I think maybe this was the first time I actually saw a visual of what a snood was.
It looked warm. So that's what matters. But that
it was a really
was
funny
fun.
Bit.
It was.
It was it a was. Funny bit.
And another thing that I really liked, because as we noted before, our siren Bianca and then the mayor's son kind of have a moment where it's alluded to that this kid is being manipulated by her mom via this app that's created by their cult, essentially, where they hypnotize people. But through the app, I thought that was really interesting way to go with what sirens can do. You know, because you never really think about how, like, Little Mermaid style, the siren coming on land and then manipulating. So I thought that was cool. You get to see an old birthday of Wednesday's, which was so fun, because that's the only time we see young Wednesday, right?
Yeah. And I would say the whole siren storyline could be something that comes up in season two. It just seems so big between Bianca and her mom that
I know
it built up and then. Really
her
interesting.
Mom was intimidating, and they talked a lot about the guy that her mom is now with, a lot about him, where I feel like he could easily be a character that pops up in this next season. And of course, you got Frankenstein being given to her, and then she's comparing herself to Mary Shelley, talking about how much more time she has to beat her. That was all fun.
But also more foreshadowing to the parts, the human parts that were collected.
Very true. Very true. Actually, I didn't put that together. Good call. I really loved the black, white, and gray Rubik's Cube that Thing was playing
that
with.
Thing's
that
playing
really
with?
Caught my attention. I want to look into whether those actually exist.
Right.
And then, of course, here is like where you kind of understand Wednesday is more interested in the mystery than it is the friendship or the boyfriend, in a way, because she lies to both of them to get them to go to the Gates house with her. She's not very sympathetic in this moment, but it doesn't matter as much when we find out the nature of her boyfriend, because here we find him scratched at the end. So we have no suspicion of Tyler, because he's scratched at the end. How did he do this scratch? should she have realized that wasn't the scratch of a beast? Does it look like, well, did he just scratch himself with his own human hand?
That's what I was putting together, is that, or maybe when he was starting to shrink back down, he did a quick one. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it was actually that scratch that made me start looking at him as a potential.
Really? Okay, because it was just too obvious. Huh, why didn't you die like everybody else?
Yeah, because we know that this creature kind of tries to disembowel you.
Right,
and like,
exactly.
Poor Eugene.
It doesn't really kill you unless it's trying to get a part. Did it kill anybody that was trying to get a part from? I guess Eugene, maybe?
Eugene is the only other person that's had an interaction that didn't die from him.
Right. And we're sure that it was the beast that slashed him, right? And not Thornhill. Because Eugene would have mentioned Thornhill when he woke up if it had been her.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she shows up all bloody over his body at that point.
Right.
Okay, well, jump ahead to the Fester episode.
Yeah.
This is the second, penultimate episode. And we finally get to meet Fred Armisen's Fester. Did it live up to what you expected from Mr. Armisen?
No.
No.
I was expecting more, because I saw him in the trailer and I was thinking, they didn't utilize his comedy rights.
I agree. I don't think Fester was written well, if I'm honest with you. And I thought, in the same way I talked about just finding stuff written on the walls, he was the moment that he brought her additional information, and that was his sole purpose.
That was it. And I was just going to say,
I don't associate him with bank robbing or whatever, or, you know, burglary, which he was supposedly did, and the whole driving.
I mean, the
around.
Motorcycle was kind of funny.
That was fun, but it didn't scream of Fester to me at all. And I think this is a case where you can't trump Christopher Lloyd, and Fred Armisen is so good at characterizations. I think one of the best at creating characters, but Christopher Lloyd just owns Fester, I feel like.
Yeah.
You can't come close to that. But he did take a different take. It was more of like a cutesy, goofy take, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a couple funny deliveries from him, but overall, I think, he was just like there to get her to the diary.
I loved his ability to disappear like Batman. I thought that was really fun.
Yes.
I loved the moment when he does disappear, when Thornhill comes in, and then he hides within the stuffed animals, and he has that E.T. moment where it's just his face among us. And I really, really enjoyed the moment at the Weather Vane, which is a cool name for a coffee shop, I gotta say.
It is.
Where he's sitting there and he picks up the ketchup bottle, and there's the crusty on the top of the ketchup bottle, and he eats it like it's a candy, and then just, so I don't know. It was, I laughed. I thought it was a fun moment.
It was funny and disgusting because someone actually thought about, like, you know, that gross part of the ketchup that dries up.
I'm gonna need you to eat that, Fred. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although I did think the relationship with him and Thing was kind of funny.
Yes. And that's what I hope they kind of play up more, is it's felt to me like Fester was able to see people for who they were, maybe more than anybody else. Because if you remember, Fester says, I saw the chemistry between you and Xavier when they were in the Secret Society's library. Like, he saw that Xavier was not the Beastie, was not a bad guy sort of thing. And his relationship with Wednesday, her feeling like, she can talk to him in a way that she can't with other people. And like, as you mentioned, Thing and him, I just hope he's kind of used more as that, not like overt therapist, but more of the, you know, inside man that really understands and everyone can talk to him, like the sounding board in the future, even for other kids there. Maybe he becomes a counselor or something, especially if who takes over for Reem is who I think it's going to be. Okay. Spoiler alert. Gwendolyn Christie's Reem in the final episode dies in a really fun, not fun, but sad, fun fashion.
Right.
What did you think? Did that one surprise you? Because that was kind of the biggest death in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I loved the way they set it all up with the shape-shifting moment right there. Because I was a little confused in that moment. And I was like, you got me. You got me there.
Why is Tyler
However,
there? Did she promise
I was not.
Why is Tyler there? When she shows up as Tyler to trick Thornhill into confessing.
And I kept thinking in my head, the way she was killed, maybe they didn't really kill her off. Because I agree. I thought that was a big death, and I wasn't really thinking they were going to do it. I'm curious as to who you think might be taking over.
Morticia!
You think so?
Well, I mean, if you go back, we see that Reem and Morticia were always head to head back in school.
Yeah.
I feel like she's someone that knows the school well enough, and she might see this as an opportunity to both give Wednesday the education and that she wants to give her via Nevermore, but simultaneously still have a relationship with her based on where they left things in this last one. And I think based on how well this series has done, Catherine Zeta would be a fool to not want that role. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would think she would want to get involved in this show now that it's what it is.
And I think it might actually blow up in her face and, you know, backfire where it puts a wedge between her and Wednesday again. Yeah. You know why? I don't want you here. This is, that's an interesting call. I like it.
I think she's the likeliest replacement. If, like you said, Reems is actually dead, but I think she is. I would be surprised if she's not.
Yeah.
Unless she was able to do some weird shape-shifting stuff while she was in the process of being buried and all that. Let's talk about the finale as a whole. Pretty quick here. All right. What'd you think of her interrogation techniques when Wednesday knows that it's Tyler? She gets all of her friends together and they tie him up. And then she goes hardcore with her interrogation at the
I thought it was funny.
It was hilarious.
And her friend's like, whoa, you're on your own.
Yeah. I loved it, and I want to see more of that hardcore Wednesday, I guess, the no holds bar Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think it was necessary also because I think, you know, her character obviously grows over the course of the series, but she was almost becoming too sympathetic and too normal. She was becoming a normie.
A lot in the previous episodes. So you think, okay, that's not going to be good if she's gotten it wrong again, but she hadn't. And when Tyler approaches her to reveal that he actually is at the cop station where he feels comfortable enough to tell her he's the murdering Jekyll Hyde beast at the cop station.
Yeah.
Great moment between those two. I actually do like that actor that plays Tyler. I saw him in that Bryan Cranston show, Your Honor. He plays the kid who accidentally runs over someone and then his judge dad tries to protect him. He was good in that, but I liked him better in this. I find him... pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I think when he went full on evil, I liked him even more. I thought that was a good turn.
I'm just going back to this whole torture method. I think you kinda have to reintroduce some weird things that are gonna make her different from the other kids. You know, we can't have otherwise what are you gonna do in season two? You got to amp it up a bit. Yeah. So, I mean, she's ready to like start wailing away on him.
I know. First with the zapper, what do you call it, taser, followed by she pulled out a hammer, right? She was about to start breaking his fingers.
She had those double tasers in her
hands. Yeah,
and her friends were like, all right, we're out.
There is one moment right after that where then, Xander is obviously, he's framed for the murder because he has pieces of jewelry and such from some of the victims. And then when she visits him in jail, when she is getting the sense that he didn't do it, she brings the picture with him, the prophetic picture. I just felt like this moment where she pulls it out again just seemed like silly to me. He's seen the picture. Yeah. He even says, I've seen this. Why? She just comes off like not like Wednesday in that moment, like, see? Like a child sort of thing.
I agree.
That felt a little forced to me. And then I guess we can jump to the big blowout at the end. No, I mean, we find out Tyler's the beast. What'd you think of this beastie? We haven't talked about the beast design of the hide.
So
Burton,
I liked how
it's Burton to how, the extreme.
Oh, absolutely. And I was gonna say, I liked how original it looked, you know, it was kind of goofy.
Yeah.
But because with the big eyes,
right.
But at the same time, I think it was effective. I really liked that Enid finally gets to wolf out.
Yes, with the pink hair and the werewolf was really fun.
Which was funny. It was like a good she's fight. There to help her friend. It's a good fright.
And I like what I liked about the hide is you didn't know it was a hide. You didn't know what it was for so long until, of course, they get the book and find out that it's a Jekyll Hyde situation. Thought they took their own take on the Jekyll and Hyde and made it more interesting than I've ever seen Jekyll and Hyde make.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like the last thing you would think would be the big bad was. And then, of course, as noted before, his mom was bipolar, had the same issue that led to Wednesday figuring stuff out as well.
Yes.
And then we have Thornhill as the big bad, who's trying to reincarnate Joseph Crackstone. And that requires Wednesday's blood, which explains why they haven't slayed her prior to this. The blood moon comes. Joseph Crackstone is reborn.
Well, let me stop you really quick there. Yes. What did you think about all the jars and like how it was done?
Well, like you said, I hadn't thought about Frankenstein. And now that I look back at it with that lens, I like it. I didn't hate it then. I mean, I thought it was like you might, Burton-esque, even though he didn't direct that one. It just felt like, what's that? The Nightmare Before Christmas-esque almost in that moment. But yeah, given that it is a Frankenstein-y thing, I don't mind it because you had to add something to the beastie going around taking away the parts. I mean, little silly, whatever, but I thought it paid off fine. Did it bother you?
No, I thought it was interesting. I think the whole thing was kind of ironic that Crackstone would even, I mean, it's exactly what he's fighting against.
Right. He needs
witchcraft to basically
actually come back.
Yeah. But, or magic in general. He needs that to bring him back.
Although it was ironic. Totally.
Yeah. I loved how much of a dick he was to Christina Ricci. And there's that great line. She's like, don't meet your heroes.
That was amazing. That was fun. I love the way this guy looked, though. I don't know. It just is not what I was expecting. He looked like the leprechaun to me. You know, he really got the pilgrim outfit. Looked like a big version of the leprechaun. I found him intimidating, but goofy at the same time. And yeah, I'm glad he got his comeuppance and obviously so misogynistic and bigoted. And what happens, though? Here's my biggest question with this finale. And of course, I'm skipping over the fact that Eugene saves the day by controlling the bees to take down Thornhill at first. But then what happens to Thornhill? She's kicked in the face by Wednesday. Then we know nothing else about it. There's no consequences for Thornhill. We don't know what happens to her, do we?
That's a great question.
I don't think we get any closure on what happened to Thornhill after that. Not taken away to jail, nothing.
I think that's done maybe on purpose.
Could be.
Maybe we will see her again.
That could be. If I was Christina, why wouldn't you want to be part of season two? But it'd be hard to do. Granted, it seems like they're going to bring back Tyler as the beast, given we see him kind of like breaking out in the ambulance at the end.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, and then the final question is: she's given a phone by Xavier, and as she's driving away, she gets an ominous text saying, "We're watching you," or "I'm watching you," with a sliced off head or whatever.
Yeah.
Ideas?
Who is it? I don't know. I mean, I was trying to think of like other people in this town that could potentially want it, or that we may have met. Maybe we haven't met.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
It's got to be someone we have met, no?
Right.
To give it more weight. But yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe Yoko? You remember, they mentioned Yoko a lot. She's kind of like peripherally there. Enid, when she moves out for a day, moves in with Yoko. I feel like I want to know more about Yoko since she's used so much, but not
and
actually
is that
present as much.
And was that like a nod to Yoko Ono breaking up the band?
Yes, it definitely was. Good call. That's very true.
Maybe it is maybe it's another student. That's a great question. I love that mystery though. I love a good cliffhanger.
And I really don't have a good idea who it would be.
And I think it's safe to say they will return with another season because of how successful this was. But not to go off topic here, Netflix is chopping things at the chopping block right now. Like, did you know that Midnight Club is not coming back?
I did hear that. So I know you liked it. And I told you that I watched the first episode and didn't love it. So
yeah,
I like Flanagan so much, but I didn't follow through with it. And I'm kind of relieved I didn't. I know. Should I still? Or was it left?
No. But I'm just saying, you know, Flanagan is like Netflix's golden boy and they're still, so I'm just saying I really really hope we get something in return here, and I'd like to believe we will with the numbers that it did, but I would need to know who sent that text otherwise.
From my from my perspective, this is their new Stranger Things. We only have one season left of Stranger Things, so I think they're going to invest four in this one, probably, if it even comes remotely close to what it did this season. And I think it would be really easy for them to do some casting that would make people watch it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm not too worried about this one. There are other shows like 1899, which I just finished. I loved it so much, but I'm a little concerned about the viewership of that. But you're right. Anything could go. And even for TV shows, it's hard to stay alive.